Hey everybody, Jace here. I just wanted to add this note on real quick at the beginning of the episode. For some reason, we had a really hard time with the internet connection tonight, and Manny's audio didn't always come through. Sometimes there was a lot of static, kind of crackly. Other times, he was just very low in volume. So I tried to adjust the volume on my mixing board here to try to make it a little easier to hear him. So again, we apologize for that. Hope it's not too distracting. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm Jace.
And I'm Manny.
All right, this episode we're going to be talking about the DC books that are coming out this Wednesday, November 23rd. And we're going to jump right into it with Action Comics number 968. Writer Dan Jurgens, artist Tyler Kirkham, colors by Ulysses Areola. So this is a continuation of the last issue of Action Comics, the Men of Steel storyline, where these guys from the future show up, and apparently sometime in the future, Lex Luthor takes over Apocalypse, and it leads to the destruction of Earth, or the enslavement of Earth, something like that. So they've come back in time to try and stop him. Not the most original storyline. So I actually didn't enjoy this issue that much. Tyler Kirkham has had some really good art on the book so far. But for me personally, I just felt the art here took a little bit of a step back. Not sure what the difference was. Like, normally his art is very good, but I don't know. The rendering just looked a little, everything looked a little distorted, looked a little off to me. Still the fine lines that we're used to seeing from him. And I thought he rendered John Kent, Superboy, okay. And I do like his Lex Luthor, but I don't know. His Superman, for some reason, just looked a little off to me. And there were a few panels that just, I don't know. Specifically, like, where that truck is knocking that future guy out of the way. I just thought it doesn't look right. It looks very two-dimensional. I mean, I guess it is a two-dimensional panel, but it just looks real flat. So definitely not Kirkham's best work. And as I said, the story, a little derivative. You know, we've seen this kind of thing before. It's the whole, if you could go back in time and kill Hitler, would you do it? So not super original. There were some good character moments. I liked John trying to help his dad out kind of in secret, and Clark Kent, you could see him kind of putting two and two together. You know, he's wondering, okay, what's the relationship this Lois has with these two? We see a different side of Clark. And by these two, I should say Superman and Superboy. And then we see a different side of Clark. You know, certainly the Clark we know would never suggest that Lex Luthor should be killed, no matter what he's going to do in the future. So that's kind of interesting. I know that in the solicitations for the February issue of Action Comics, which just came out this week, it looks like we're finally, after the first of the year, going to learn the truth behind Clark. I know, Manny, you've been really wanting to know. I know it's been dragging Action Comics down a little bit for you, this ongoing mystery of who Clark Kent is. So hopefully we'll get some answers in the next few issues. But for this issue itself, it was kind of an average issue, I guess. One of the weaker Action Comics issues, I feel like. I don't know. It feels like it started off so great with so many different questions and a fresh start. But I think I mentioned it last issue. This storyline in particular feels very 90s to me. It feels very villain of the week, harkening back to the Triangle era of the Superman book, that's not necessarily a bad thing because it is entertaining, but there's so much more that Jurgens has shown that he can do with the book, especially delving into the relationships between Luthor and Superman and Superboy. So I like it when there's more character moments mixed in with the action, so hopefully we'll see a return to that in the upcoming issues. What do you think of this particular book?
I thought the male torsos were done. We're really bulky. I see exactly what you mean. Even at one of the last pages with Superman, he's really like too bulky, I think. And I understand Superman's all powerful and whatnot, but he's a little too muscular for what I'm used to. And then like Clark right behind him has like this really big body and kind of a smaller head. So I can definitely see what you're saying on the artwork. And the only really part of this I found really interesting is the fact that Superman has to be Superman, and even though it's Lex Luthor, he has to save him because he's Superman, and that's just what he does. So, other than that, I'm starting to get a little annoyed with Jonathan always jumping into the fight. I kind of want to see something a little bit different. And still not really feeling this extra Clark Kent. So it was an okay issue, but not the greatest.
Yeah, I agree 100%. I mean, I'm still in on Action Comics for sure, because there's still things that I want to know, but I don't know. I think a lot of the reason that I'm not enjoying the storyline is that, like I said, it's just so derivative. It's kind of like been there, done that, so... Well, the next book.
Well, you've read a lot more stories than I have, so.
Yeah, that's true. Well, the next story we're going to talk about is Batman Beyond number 2, written by Dan Jurgens as well. This time, the art is by Bernard Chang, and the colors by one of my favorite colorists, Marcelo Maiello. I almost feel like I read this book for the art, because this is really a great team. Bernard Chang and Marcelo Maiello have been working together for a long time, and it really shows. The art, in a way, looks very effortless, and Bernard, in this particular issue, has some really interesting page layouts. I especially like the pages where there aren't really any borders on the panels. It gives it a very cinematic feel, and of course, Marcelo Maiello's colors are always very impactful. I love when he goes monochromatic in a way, or dichromatic, and there's a lot of explosions, and he always makes those look really realistic too. As far as the story itself, you know, I'm not a huge Batman Beyond fan. I've never seen a single episode of the cartoon, which I know is sacrilege to Batman Beyond fans like Manny. But I am finding it interesting. I probably will keep reading Batman Beyond, at least until we find out exactly how Terry McGinnis returned. That does have me interested. But again, you know, I've said it 1,000 times, I'm not a fan of the Joker, and the main villains in the Batman Beyond universe are like a whole gang of Jokers. So to me, he's so overused at this point. I'm really kind of over it. So I'm just glad that it's such a great art team that keeps me interested and gives me something to look forward to when it's not really the story that I'm so much into. Other than wanting to know why Terry McGinnis has returned, the rest of it with the Joker's trying to revive the original Joker, I could kind of do without. So let's hear what a real Batman Beyond fan has to say. What do you think, Manny?
You know, for the first time in a while, I'm kind of sick of the Joker storyline.
Say it ain't so.
We're good?
I said, say it ain't so.
Oh, I thought you said you couldn't hear me again. Yeah, I don't know. Something about the book starting off with going back and Joker's death, and then it took me out of the story to the point where I completely forgot that Terry McGinnis is going undercover. So when they shut down the bat plane, I was kind of like, I don't get it. Oh, what's going on? And then finally, right almost at the end, I was like, oh, that's right. Terry McGinnis is going to infiltrate the gang. And then I thought to myself, well, I don't know. I kind of lost the taste of it, taste for it, because just a, it's kind of gimmicky. And I'd rather see some of the other characters from the Batman Beyond universe, not necessarily the Jokers at this point. It was a cool concept at first, but the way it's being developed, I'm not really interested in two or three issues of Terry McGinnis undercover as a Joker. Just too much Joker for me, even for me.
Wow.
But you're right. The artwork is really, really good on it. I just wish it had a little bit of a stronger story. I can do with some of the other villains from the Batman Beyond universe. That'd be great. But I think we need to put the Joker on the shelf for a while.
Agreed, 100%. All right, next book we're going to talk about is Deathstroke number 7, written by Christopher Priest, pencils by Carlo Pagulian, inks by Jason Paz, and colors by Jeremy Cox. I know you're behind on Deathstroke. Unfortunately, one of the things about Deathstroke, and this was one of the books I was most excited for, probably after Wonder Woman, this was the Rebirth book that I was most excited for, just because Christopher Priest is such a modern master when it comes to exploring complex characters. You know, his run on Black Panther is legendary, and complex is certainly an appropriate word to use to describe Deathstroke. And then when I heard he was going to take him back to his more villainous roots, that had me excited as well. But unfortunately, it's been a little up and down. It's been a little inconsistent. Some issues have been really, really good. Some issues not so much. And I think after reading this issue that what I can point to as the reason some of these books tend to drag is pacing. It's all about the pacing. And I just wonder, again, if this isn't going to be something that reads much better in a trade. So what I find interesting is this is the first time that I can think of that I've seen Superman go up against Deathstroke, which is really kind of exciting in a way. But you have to wonder, is it... I mean, there's a reason he hasn't ever gone up against him. You know, it seems like Superman could just swoop down, pick up Deathstroke, and, you know, I don't know, fly him up to the high atmosphere. Deathstroke can't hold his breath forever, and then it's over. You know, it seems like such a mismatch. So we barely see the beginnings of it here. We haven't actually got to the Superman-Deathstroke fight, or if there even will be a Superman-Deathstroke fight. So I am looking forward to that in a way. And this issue certainly picks up with Jericho, Deathstroke's son, from where it left off last issue. Last issue, I felt it really dragged. It was very much a problem of pacing, like I said. This issue was much more interesting. And again, it's probably going to read a lot better in trade. I really do feel like Carlo Pagulian has a great handle on who Deathstroke is, and the art is really superb. There's some big splash pages with really beautiful looking backgrounds. I like his storytelling from panel to panel. Facial expressions are done very well also. And it's a complex book. There's a lot there. There's a lot of depth to the characters. But again, if you don't have a history with Deathstroke, I think that sometimes you may find it a chore to get through issues, and it may be a case of, you know, waiting until you have a big chunk of the story, reading it all together. Or it might, for some people, you might even have to wait till Priest's run is over completely. Now, I know that when Black Panther was coming out, it wasn't necessarily critically acclaimed, didn't get a lot of attention, and it wasn't until later when people could go back and read the entire Priest run as a whole that it really started to get some critical acclaim and people started talking about it as a seminal work. So that may be just the way Priest, because he plays a long game and he plants things early on that don't necessarily make sense and you figure out later on. So that may just be the nature of his writing these days. He's not your prototypical comic book writer, at least not anymore. You know, early on, I think that before he kind of found this style of writing that he uses now, his writing was probably a lot more entry level and a lot more easily approached. Now there's a little bit of barrier to entry. You really have to do your homework, understand the character, understand Priest's style to really get the most out of it. Or you need to, as I said, read it in a big chunk. So I still find it entertaining. I love when Carlo Pagulian gets to do the art. The inks and the colors by Paz and Cox, respectively, are done very well. And I should mention Larry Hama is doing breakdowns now. I think that's helping Pagulian do more issues. Instead of one out of three, he's probably doing, you know, every other issue. So the art team, I can't fault. It's good. Artistically, it's well-paced, and the storytelling from panel to panel is very good. So I'm kind of torn because, like I said, the issue is pacing it. And again, it may be that Priest is approaching it in the long form, and, you know, sometimes you just have to have those issues where not a lot happens or things just kind of drag. He certainly harkens back to the olden days, quote-unquote, of comics in the late 70s and early to mid 80s, where there was a lot more dialogue, there was a lot more to read. So from that perspective, you get a lot more entertainment for your dollar. You know, it takes a good half hour, 20 minutes maybe, to read an issue of Deathstroke, whereas, you know, like Titans, for example, Titans number 5, we're going to talk about a little bit, literally took me 6 minutes to read. So there's that to consider as well. All right, next up we have Detective Comics number 945, written by James Tynion IV. There's several artists. We had Al Barrio Nuevo on pencils. We had Carmen Canero on pencils, and we had Scott Hanna on inks, and colors were by Adriano Lucas. I'm going to let you go first, Manny, because I know you really enjoyed this particular issue.
Well, you know, it's one thing to get a group of supervillains together that have whether they're twiddling their mustache or they have some sort of, you know, money agenda, world domination, etc. It's another to have a group of villains come together like the victim syndicates, who are a group of people, like we learned last issue, that have a very, very good reason to be hostile towards Batman, just because they got hurt, they got their lives changed during one of Batman's encounters with whoever the villain of the week was at the time, and their lives are changed forever. They're scarred for life in physical and emotional ways, and now this issue, we're seeing all the repercussions of that. We're seeing the whole team really, really doubt themselves, really put into question the mission that Batman brought forth to them, even Batman himself having trouble keeping them all together just because of how guilty they feel now for what they've done. Question is it we doing the right thing? Is it really worth it? Doing lives that were being in danger. Batman himself said that he can't even remember anymore all the lives he affected, and he's having trouble finding that first victim, which is the leader of the group. I thought it was really, really, I like the fact that they're focusing on Cassandra Cain. No. That's her name, right? Spoiler?
Stephanie Brown.
Wow, I was way off. I knew I was off. that they're focusing on Stephanie just seems to have a very different perspective based on her background, her dad, but where she is with her relationship with the now quote unquote deceased Robin. And it's all coming full circle. So it's really interesting story, and yeah, it has a lot of artists, but just the way it's all laid out story wise, but I thought thought the book was great. Very interested in it. Want to see how the character develops further. Does this maybe break a couple of them down to going back to crime, maybe like Clayface, like Stephanie from the team? It's a lot to take. Does it bring them all closer together? So, definitely still in on Detective.
Now, you read this before I did and talked about how great it was, so I don't know, maybe that was why I didn't necessarily enjoy it that much. I guess maybe my expectations were a little too high. It's not to say it was bad. It's just for me, there really wasn't much there. I mean, much like Action Comics, this is an argument that I've heard before. In fact, wasn't it in Batman Begins at the end when Batman's talking to Commissioner Gordon? Although I don't think he was commissioner at the time. He was saying, you know, here you are, you dress in a costume, and then the villains start dressing in costume. You start using, you know, automatic weapons, they start using automatic weapons. You know, it's this idea of escalation. And so, you know, the fact that this victim syndicate is saying, oh, you know, we only exist because Batman's here, and if there was no Batman, then these villains wouldn't be in Gotham City. I mean, it's a flawed argument. This is life. This is how things are, and you just have to deal with it. You know, nobody can really say what would have happened if things were different, because that's just not reality. And so I guess I have little patience for people like that in real life. Like, oh, what if this, what if that? And they're kind of complaining about their lot in life. You know, everybody has things they have to deal with. And, you know, life is full of tragedy. You know, I'm sorry for that. I wish I could change it. But, you know, that's reality. And everybody deals with it the best they can. And, you know, you try to find happiness. And I know it's a comic. And it's certainly intriguing. And it's something that makes you think. And so from that perspective, I like that they're dealing with this. But I just have a feeling once we find out who the victim number one is, and what exactly happened to them, it's not going to be so different than the things that happen to bystanders in comics all the time. Now, most of the time, it's not addressed. So, again, I do appreciate that Tynan is addressing it here. And it's giving Batman time to pause and think. And like you said, it is a focus on Stephanie Brown in a way. And so the fact that she is questioning Batman is interesting, because I know that she has a very loyal fan base, and so this is something that's going to get them thinking and talking, and I appreciate that as well. And the last page I thought was kind of cool. I'm sure that that's something that Tim kind of left behind, something of himself. Maybe he did it because he knew he was going to be going away to college, and so didn't necessarily do it so that Stephanie would have something of him when he was no longer alive, or at least they think he's no longer alive. So that was interesting as well. The art was a little inconsistent. It's not surprising, being that we basically had two different artists on the book. One of them did all their own art, or I should say the pencils and inks, and then one person was inked by Scott Hanna. So I definitely enjoyed the art by Al Barrenuevo more than the other artist. It just felt a little more complete. But again, it's probably just a product of the bi-weekly shipping. So, and it's just hard to keep a regular artist on that kind of a schedule. So I'm definitely ready for this story to wrap up. I'll say that this victim syndicate has been the least enjoyable arc. The first arc was done so well. I'm just finding this one to be a little less so. It is much more of a character-driven arc, though. I'm not sure I'm enjoying it more than Monster Men, to be honest. So I guess we'll wait and see how it wraps up, what exactly Tynan has to say about Batman causing collateral damage, what his kind of final stamp on that issue is. It may determine how much I enjoy this, whether I ever go back and read it again. All right, up next we have Flash number 11. That book is written by Joshua Williamson. This particular issue, the art was by David Jean-Felice. Colors are by Ivan Placencia. I wonder if when Carmine DiGiandomenico can't get to a book, if he's recommending other Italian artists, because it seems like, well, I guess last issue was Jorge Corona. He's probably not Italian. But David Jean-Felice, certainly that's an Italian name. So I'll go ahead and I'll talk about the art first. It's very similar to the style that DiGiandomenico has. It's the lines are maybe a little cleaner, and certainly the backgrounds are cleaner as well. Rendering, the lines are a little bit thick for me. The proportions are good, the anatomy is good, but sometimes the faces look a little angular. So it's serviceable enough art. You know, it's comic book art, and I do like that there's that consistency of feel that I think will show well in a trade. Like whenever Barry's using the super speed, the lightning's crackling around him and everything. And then, of course, it's Ivan Placencia on colors, which, you know, he's been the colorist all along, so there's consistency there as well. As far as the story goes, it's pretty interesting. I've never read a lot of stories with the Shade. I didn't even know that he'd kind of gone over to the side of the Angels before. So it was cool that we got a little bit of background on him. And it didn't seem like it was a lot of exposition. It seemed to kind of fit into the story. The idea of these two women, kind of the loves of Shade and Barry Allen, being in charge of the Shadowlands, I find that to be interesting as well. It certainly creates a dynamic where I'm not exactly sure how Barry and Wally are going to get out of this one. So it's interesting in that. I do wish the Flash title, I wish we were getting a little more movement on the DC Rebirth story, even if it was just a little panel here or there, just so that we know that the powers that be haven't forgotten about that. But other than that, I don't really have anything bad to say about the issue. It's another solid issue from Joshua Williamson, and I love that he's pulling some of these more obscure characters like Shade out of the mothballs, so to speak, and using them. I think that there's a tendency sometimes to use villains that are, I don't know, popular, I guess you'd say, and then we just end up getting tired of them, kind of like we were talking about with the Joker. So it was Paper Cut last issue, and now Shade this issue, so really cool. Plus, you know, I'm a big fan of Gentleman Ghost. And Shade has a top hat too, so maybe there's just something about a villain in a top hat that really tickles my fancy. What were your thoughts on Flash number 11, Manny?
You just like fast villain.
Yeah.
I really liked it. Really enjoyed the issue. I liked the art. I liked the fact that they're going to have to find a way to work around their love interests, and I wonder if Shade's really being sincere about being on the side of the Angels. And then they've taken quite a bit of time, Williamson has, in talking about how Wally is trying to be more trustworthy with Barry, and he's trying to show him up, trying to be the true Kid Flash. And I wonder how that's all going to come into play with maybe saving Iris, or how that's all going to come together in the Shadowland. And so with that, I'm very interested to see what happens next. I've seen Shade a few times before, and I think that's only in like a couple of television series where he was part of a group of villains, but didn't don't really know much about him to really critique him. not the biggest, not very excited to see him, but the fact that they have Iris taking and being kind of the baddie for now, that is pretty nice.
All right. Well, next up we have Frostbite number 3. Did you get a chance to read that one?
No, I have not.
So the first issue, Frostbite, well, first let me say, again, Joshua Williamson, writer, Jason Sean Alexander is the artist, and Luis NCT is the colorist. Now, the first issue totally blew me away, brand new world, very well done, great introduction. Second issue really kind of slowed down, much less information was contained in the issue, and so I was very curious to see which direction this was going to take. This one was much closer to the second issue in that, again, we didn't get a lot of information. We kind of meet the big bad, so to speak. But we don't really know how he got to be in charge. Boss Burns is his name. He's infected with Frostbite as well. Beyond that, we don't really know a lot about him other than he seems to be completely ruthless. And then, as far as the action and the setup of the story going forward, there definitely is a lot of action, and our main character is certainly in bad shape, let's say. Her and her charge aren't left in a very good place, I'll just put it that way, at the end of the issue. So what Keaton and Jennifer do going forward, things look pretty bleak, I'll just put it that way. So it's still an interesting story. It still has a lot of action. It's very taut. It's very compelling. But we just haven't gotten a lot of background and a lot of information going forward. I think that Williamson is just trying to get us so hooked into the moment with these characters that we'll kind of forget about the overall story and be caught up in the moment. But the problem is it's hard to really get invested in these characters when we don't know that much about them yet. You know, we've learned a little, most of that from the first issue. Second issue gave us a little more insight. This issue, again, we learned some things, but nothing about the main characters. They're just in this situation. And so, again, I think that leads to kind of a barrier for the reader in getting invested and really caring about what these characters are up to and the situation they're left in. I mean, there is the hook in that the situation there is in is very dire. It's very much like a cliffhanger kind of ending, so you want to know what's going to happen next. But to be a good story, you need to not only want to know what happens next, you need to care about what's going to happen next in as much as it affects these characters. And I think that's just what's missing at this point in the story. So again, this is a 6-issue arc. A 6-issue story, so it may be that it's something that reads better in the trade. You know, I don't fault people for trade waiting because it is so much less expensive. But I find myself saying that a lot now, and it, in a way, it's kind of sad because to me, comics are supposed to be read monthly. As far as the art goes, it's the same art we've seen, you know, throughout the series so far. Jason Sean Alexander, very post-apocalyptic. Everything looks worn down, including the characters and the colors by Luis NCT. Very washed out. So it's consistently good. And a lot of this issue takes place out on the plains. And so in the foreground, you see snow falling. Everything has kind of an overlay, this foggy mist of snow kind of obscuring our view. So you really get the feel of the world that they're living in. All right, up next we have Hal Jordan, the Green Lantern Corps number 9. This has been a book that's risen up to this top of my stack. It's right up there with Wonder Woman and Green Arrow as one of the best DC Rebirth titles. This is Bottled Light, Part 2, Brainiac. The writer is Robert Venditti, pencils by Rafa Sandoval, and inks by Jordi Tarragona, with colors by Tomei More. Really enjoyed this issue. It was great to see Abin Sur return, in a way. It's great to know that Hal Jordan is not dead. I like the interaction between the Yellow Lanterns and the Green Lanterns. I did find it strange, in a way, or I don't know, it just kind of bothered me that the Green Lanterns didn't trust Sornik Natu a little more. I mean, she was a Green Lantern for a long time, and I understand that she's been part of the Yellow Lanterns, and I understand that she made some decisions that, on the surface, don't necessarily look like they're in the best interest of the universe. But these Green Lanterns weren't even there when those decisions were made. They were in the previous universe. They didn't even see that going on. So just because she's in a yellow uniform, all of a sudden they're questioning every single motive and every single decision she's making. And I don't know, that just didn't make a whole lot of sense to me. I mean, we've certainly seen these main Green Lanterns change uniforms before. You know, we've seen Hal be a Blue Lantern. We've seen Kyle be a White Lantern. We've seen Guy Gardner be a Red Lantern. So, I don't know. The identities as a Lantern seem to be much more fluid than they have been in the past. So, I just think they should give her the benefit of the doubt a little bit more. It is intriguing to see the main villain be Brainiac. I can't ever recall Green Lanterns going up against Brainiac before. So I'm very curious to see that battle. And I just love the fact that even the two guardians that were sent for whatever reason, Hal Jordan's ring sought them out, even they make such a huge deal about the fact that Hal Jordan really is the greatest of all Green Lanterns because he was able to actually forge a ring himself, something that only a guardian of the universe was able to do before. So there's a lot of good going on here. There's just enough action to keep the momentum going, I would say. But I wouldn't say this is an action-packed issue. I would say it's very much a setup. It's putting all the characters in place for a really big action-packed issue next time. So I'm very much looking forward to that. And I also really enjoyed the sequence with a Rotlop fan and him having his own kind of Green Lantern credo. That was really, really cool. I really, really enjoyed that. Kind of single-handedly defeats all the Starro parasites himself. So, the art, Rafa Sandoval really has been knocking it out of the park on this book. He gives it scope and grandeur that very much suits a cosmic book like Green Lantern. And one other thing that's always very important on a Green Lantern book is the colors, especially when you have, you know, multiple lanterns, multiple aliens. You want to be able to distinguish between all of them, and you want to have the colors bright. And again, cosmic, and being the fact that they're trapped under this force field, this bubble, the little matrix looking chicken wire thing looks cool. The energy blast firing up against it as they try to break out looks cool. And that's all the colors right there. So Tomei More does an excellent job. A little bit of a primary palette, which again suits the book very well, being that you want to show the stark contrast between Yellow Lanterns and Green Lanterns and the difference in skin tones of all the aliens. So really, really bang up job for sure. What are your thoughts, Manny?
Green Lantern Heaven. Who knew it existed? well, me at least. Has this ever been shown before?
Not to my knowledge. I don't recall ever even hearing of it before.
Oh, okay. Well, although I like the fact that, well, I mean, in theory, he's dead. But I don't know. I thought it was cheesy and kind of overused usual, you know, you're dead, but you shouldn't be dead because you're destined for so much more.
Yeah, that's true.
Type story. But I mean, what are you going to do? There's only so many ways you can bring... Well, I mean, in comics, there's a billion ways to bring people back from the dead. I guess they just kind of picked one that would bring back a classic character for a little while.
Yeah, well, I mean... Did you even think for a minute, though, that Hal Jordan was really dead?
No, of course not. He can't be
dead.
I mean,
the book is called Hal Jordan as a Green Lantern Corps.
Yeah. Yeah, so I thought maybe, like, his essence was, like, flying all over the universe, and they would have to, like, the Guardians would have to go and, like, well, I don't know. He would maybe kept in a bottle by the Orange Lantern, by Lara Freeze, and I don't know. Something, my imagination can run in 100 ways. Definitely a setup issue. I agree with you in the sense that I found it kind of annoying how much John Stewart was like really a jerk to all the Yellow Lanterns. Like, you guys, he showed up to help you guys. Guy Gardner kind of vouches for them. And so with so much, you guys just got here. You can't be mad. I really hope that going forward, maybe they cut some over more slack and they're able to work together to get out of the predicament because they finally figured out that they're the model. I agree that it's definitely a setup issue. So I really am curious to think about how the heck they're going to get out of this one because there's only so many ways to get out of the bottle. And then also, what definitely very, very curious to know what role the Guardians play. Because they're probably going to be one of the keys to bringing back Hal to the universe. And do they reestablish kind of like Oa? Or what? I know that awful kind of substitute for now. But. What happens going forward beyond this whole Brainiac part, which is I'm really more curious about. Because we know they're going to get out, but I'm more interested in knowing how they can actually bring their reestablishment.
Yeah, and I'd almost say rather than Green Lantern Heaven, I'd almost want to refer to it as Green Lantern Valhalla. Because even Abin Sur says, you know, the Emerald Space where deserving Green Lanterns go for their final reward. So definitely has that that North's final reward kind of feel. All right, up next we have Harley Quinn number 8, written by Jimmy Palmiotti and Amanda Connor. The art in this issue is by Chad Harden. And the flashback art by Andrew Robinson. And we also have some dream art by Brett Blevins, with colors by Andrew Robinson, and flashback colors, the flashback colors by Andrew Robinson, and the colors in the regular sequences by Hi-Fi. So I'm not in on Harley Quinn anymore, I haven't been reading at all, so this is all you.
You know, this is a really interesting issue, because it has the Harley Quinn moment, and but it's Poison Ivy and Harley Quinn going on a vacation to what they later find out is nudist island, and pretty much having a really good time together, developing their relationship, and kind of, you can see their chemistry, how they can definitely be more than friends, and, you could also get a little bit more on her relationship with Joker and how it really screwed her head emotionally. And for me, I thought that it was really interesting because by the end of the issue, she really you can see her finally being able to open up to Ivy and almost ask her to go out with her in her own way. And in a very, very frightening twist, Ivy finds and says we can only be friends because her reasoning is her cause, her towards plants and well-being in the natural world, is her greatest love, and there's nothing that can get in the way. She can only be a friend to Harley, and I thought that was just the worst for her, because after talking with her about her relationship and some of the things that happened, and really finally, yeah, I felt like she was trying to make a serious connection. She got shut down. So going forward, I want to know what Amanda and Jimmy are going to do with her behavior. Do they just kind of brush it off, give you a wacky story, or does this moment kind of have an emotional question where she maybe turns back and a little bit more into her own self, or both off, like when she's Joker. I mean, it happens in real life all the time with people really bad relationships. They shouldn't be in the relationship, but that's what they know. That they know what to expect. And in this case, with Ivy, Harley had no idea what to expect, but he hoped for the best, and she fell a little short where she got back. So I'm looking forward to see what they do with her next. It may be a point where I keep going with the book or I drop it all together. Because if it's a little bit more of the same, then I'm not really seeing the point to keep reading. But from the beginning, where she kind of grew out of her sidekick shell to her independent, strong self, where now she's helping everybody out. And then finally in issue 24, where she really literally beat up and kind of went off on her own. To here, I think this is another one of those crossroads where something has to change a little bit.
What about the art?
The art was good. I mean, it's the same as it's always been. Chad Harden's always done a great job at drawing Harley. The artwork with in the beginning was very, very different. That's just the dream. Not so much into that. But I love the colors. Doug Sinclair and Chad Harden. I wish one day I can get a commission. I like his style. I like the way the book is done. It's been done well.
All right. Next up, we have Superpowers number 1. This is an all-ages book by Art Baltazar and Franco. So it's definitely a much more of a cartoony style, almost like a comic strip style. It's a relatively quick read. Said definitely all ages. If you have kids that are interested in comics, this is something you could give them. That being said, kind of some adult themes, and it really... It's a very fast-paced story. There's not a lot of background. There's not a lot of explanation. So it was enjoyable. I was kind of struck by how little explanation and how little humor there was, though. I don't know. I'm not sure how I feel about it. I wanted to like it more than I did, probably. But being usually in kids' book, it's like you read that book. Sometimes there's even two or three stories. And so all you need to do is read that, and you pretty much get the whole feel of what's going on. This didn't necessarily feel like that. This felt like it's going to be a much longer story. I think this is a 6-issue miniseries, so maybe the whole story is going to play out over the full 6 issues. So I guess we'll see. Did you get a chance to read this one?
No, I didn't get a chance to read this one.
All right, then, moving right along. Teen Titans number 2. This book was written by Benjamin Percy. And as we told you before, John Boy Meyer is no longer on the book, so the pencils in this particular issue are by Diogenes Neves. You have Rue Jose and Sean Parsons on inks, and Jim Charalampidis and John Kalis on colors. So what were your thoughts on Teen Titans number 2?
A lot of Damien, not a lot of Titans. I have no problem with Damien. I like him as a character. I know you don't, but the book is called Teen Titans, and it's focused a little too much, in my opinion, on Damian, especially with having Damian on the mother book, and him being such a critical part of right now Superman. I like the story, but I kind of was hoping for a little bit more Teen Titans as a group instead of a Damian Wayne and the Teen Titans. That's kind of what I feel like we should be called at this point, because it's all been revolving around him instead of the group. I don't think that the group would be in so much danger if he hadn't brought them in anyway, because it seems like that Ra's al Ghul was really after him. It's happened that he had the Titans with him. So that's a little bit disappointing. And then I know you and I have talked a little bit about the artwork changing, because created differences with John Boy Myers. That was probably the biggest letdown, because I really enjoyed the artwork the first time. So being Starfire a little bit different. Okay, not a little bit, a lot different. Some of the other characters, she's the one who really stood out was a little bit disappointing. Yeah, I know that this is like a villain issue with a different artist in history. So it's gonna change again. I didn't really mind the way Damian was drawn this boy, but overall wish it was a little bit more. I know it's hard to be a little more specific on a character in a group book, but it's okay to a little too much. Maybe something where even in the new too, with the different characters to have, like Bunker, and it seems to always be more of a group, kind of group book, and this is better. Very, very specific to it. So, I know I've said that already before, but
yeah, I would agree with a lot of what you're saying. I certainly feel like it is much more focused on Damian than anyone else. Fortunately, I think it's just kind of a byproduct of the way that Benjamin Percy has decided to put the team together. I mean, kind of their whole reason for coming into being is because, you know, Damian has turned 13 and now it's time for him to take his place as like the head of this assassination team. And for whatever reason, the rest of the Teen Titans have been chosen as the targets for this assassination team, I guess, to kind of prove to themselves and Ra's al Ghul as well that this assassination team is worthy of being members of the League of Assassins. So, all that being said, I'm not a fan of Damian. I could have maybe excused it if we had the dynamic John Boy Myers art. But it's not just that we lose the art, because in all fairness to Diogenes Neves, this art's gorgeous. It's beautiful. It doesn't have the same tone and it doesn't have the same feel as the first issue. And that inconsistency bothers me a little bit. But also, more than that, there's a playfulness and a sense of fun that John Boy Myers' art had in the first issue and in the one-shot that's missing here. And that tone, that sensibility that he brought to the book made all the difference for me in being able to see Damian in a different light, so to speak. And being that John Boy wasn't just handling the art, the visuals, but he was also involved with story, probably has to do with the sense of tone as well. So him being off the book is definitely a big loss. I hope that it doesn't hurt the sales of the book. But in my case, I'm probably out on Teen Titans after this issue. I may give it one more, because I know there's a different artist on the next issue. Coy Pham, I believe, is taking over. and you know, we'll probably get an advanced copy, so I'll probably check it out. But based on what I've seen from the previews, I really don't care for the art, and it's going to be, you know, really hard for me to continue, being that, like you said, it's such a Damien focused story, and you know, without the art to kind of, and the tone that Myers brought to the book, without that to kind of temper the Damien-ness of it, so to speak, yeah, I'm probably going to be done with Teen Titans. All right, up next we have Titans number 5. This issue was written by Dan Abnett. Art is by the Dream Team of Brett Booth on pencils, Norm Ratman on inks, and Andrew Dollhouse on colors. I don't know how much more I can say about this art team. I mean, they, for me, are the best trio working in comics today. Brett Booth, I've said it a million times, dynamic panel layouts. This issue is really focused on Wally West and the things he does to keep Wally at the center of this story while having everything else play out around him. Superb. And it goes beyond just the panel layouts and the page layouts. I mean, just such a sense of movement that he gives. Particularly, there's the one page where the whole page is Wally running, and it's at an angle. Looks like he's almost running uphill. And then you have 4 or 5 panels below that, and they're at an angle as well. And it really helps give that sense of Wally fighting uphill, fighting himself, fighting to move faster through the Speed Force. So I don't know anyone. I mean, when Brett Booth left Flash, I was sad that he had left that title. I did not know at that time it was because he was going to take over Titans and they were bringing back Wally West. I had no idea. And so it's a match made in heaven. You know, he filled in on a few issues of Aquaman while he was waiting to get started on this, waiting for Rebirth to be announced and everything. But so dynamic. Great facial expressions, such a sense of movement, such a sense of action, great storytelling, great facial expressions. I mean, just amazing. Amazing art, amazing colors by Dollhouse. Does a great job. There's not the lightning that we see in the Flash book by Dijon Domenico and the other artists that have been on that book. There is lightning here. You know, Wally, his new costume is much more silver and red, or white and red. Almost a bluish white or bluish silver. And there is lightning, but it's not the chaotic lightning that you see in the Flash book. It's much more streamlined. It's much more flowing. It gives much more of a sense of movement. So I really enjoy that. As far as the story itself in this issue, I love that we're seeing the reestablishment of the relationship between Linda Park and Wally West. And then at the last minute, Wally, or last second, or nanosecond, I should even say, Wally is snatched away. But very much a Wally-focused issue. The art does a great job focusing on that. It's kind of a fast read in that it just focuses on these few seconds in time. It was like 5 or 6 seconds. The whole issue takes place in 5 or 6 seconds. So it's very interesting that Abnett chose to do it this way. Shows Wally's place in the DC universe. You know, one of the most iconic moments in DC Comics history is that scene in Crisis on Infinite Earths number 8, where Barry Allen sacrifices himself to save the whole universe. This, on a smaller scale, is the same kind of thing. Wally knows that he's running so fast that he's going to lose himself. He's going to be sucked back into the Speed Force, maybe fall through infinity forever. He says it himself. But he doesn't hesitate for a moment to do it, because for him it's worth it. He's going to save all his friends. They're the reason he is who he is. And he, like I said, he doesn't hesitate for a moment to do what he thinks he needs to do, even to the point of saving all them and Linda. So very heroic. If somebody wanted to know who Wally West was, like, oh, Wally West is the Flash, you know, can you sum him up quickly? I would just hand him this issue. Say, here, take 10 minutes, read this issue. This tells you everything you need to know about the strength, the character, the heroism of Wally West. So really, really great issue. I doubt that DC brought Wally West back and Geoff Johns used him as kind of a catalyst to launch the whole Rebirth storyline. I doubt that they did that only to have him be gone forever through the machinations of Abracadabra. So I expect to see him return. How it happens, probably over the course of the next few issues of Titans, we'll find out. I can't wait. Really, really incredible story. Art and story seamlessly work together to give the prototypical Wally West story, in my opinion. What did you think, Manny?
This was a literal fast issue. I really enjoyed it. this is another one of those books where it's really, really character-oriented, centered. That's the word I was looking for. Kind of like the same way that Teen Titans really centered around Damian. This one's really centered around Wally. But I think this one's a little bit more excusable because we want to see Wally because of his implications with the overall Rebirth storyline. So we kind of want to see more of him so that maybe we get some more insights on what's going on. Maybe get some tidbits on the status of that story and things like that. So it's a little bit different. And in this case, this issue, it was a fast read for me because I really wanted to see if he was going to be successful or not. It's set up so well. You have different members of the Titans in different places in the United States, and he has to very, very quickly decide who he's going to save first, why he's going to save him first, who he's going to save last, and as he's running, he's realizing what he's doing, the dangers he's putting himself to. But like you said, it doesn't matter because he's a hero. And I have to completely agree with you. If you want, somebody wants to become a fan of Wally West, all you need to do is handle the issue because it definitely shows a lot about his character. And I'm still not sold on Kadabra being the reason why he's disappeared and brought him back or whatever. So I'm very interested to see how that develops next issue too. How he comes back or where he goes to. Maybe we get a little bit more main story. Like you said about that creative team, the artwork team, just so good. It's a really beautiful book to look at, really bright, a lot of lightning, a lot of running, a lot of speed. So it's a fast book. Just it's really, really well done as a whole, I think. A quality book. So that's all I got to say about it. Just pretty good.
All right. Up next, we have Vigilante Southland number 2. This book was written by Gary Phillips with art by Elena Casagrande and colors by Julia Brusco. First issue had a bit of a pacing problem. Again, I mentioned that Gary Phillips is a writer of crime novels. He's written comics before, but not extensively. So I'm sure it's just a matter of maybe trying to fit too much or trying to figure out how to tell the story best in this different style. It's a very different animal from writing a prose novel to seeing things on the comic book page. So I feel like about halfway through the second issue, he really kind of hit his stride and the story started to pick up a little bit and it felt like the story beats were moving along at the proper pace. I feel like the first issue and a half, it just felt a little rushed. But again, I think it's just Gary Phillips trying to set up the story that he wants to tell in a limited amount of space. Sales unfortunately dictate a lot of what is able to be put on the stands, and this Vigilante Southland is a 6-issue arc. Again, probably something that factored into the decision to make it that long would be that's the perfect size for a trade. So I sound like a broken record, but maybe, again, this is going to read better in a trade. But I did like seeing the character development that we're starting to see, especially in the second half of this issue number 2, and I feel like from this point forward, as long as Phillips keeps the same pace and the same level of action and kind of not intrigue, but mystery, I guess you'd say, because we're not exactly sure who the villain is at this point and exactly how all the pieces are going to fit together. If he can keep that sense of making the story compelling and us wanting to learn the answers along with the main character, whose name I cannot remember right now, Donnie. So as long as he can keep that, I think that it'll end up being a successful story overall. The art by Elena Casagrande, I think this is her first American comics work. It's a little wonky at times. I can't really fault her rendering. The lines, her line work is not really as clean as I like. But for the most part, I'd say 90% of the panels are done very, very well. She does have a strong sense of storytelling, as well as she varies the angles a lot from one panel to the next. There's a lot of panels where we're looking at the characters from above or just at kind of a weird angle. She does keep it interesting in that way, especially because there are a lot of moments in the story where it's just people talking, and those can get kind of boring if you don't kind of move things around and switch it up visually for the reader. So from that sense, she does a very, very good job. So overall, pretty solid issue. Vigilante is one of my favorite characters, so I'm definitely in for the rest of the story based on what I've read so far in the first two issues. What about you, Manny? You're not real familiar with Vigilante, so what did you think?
No, I'm not. I'm actually I kind of want to wait for a trade boat on this one. Just because I like the story, but I feel like I've finished it so far. I got a little lost. And I feel like I would enjoy it a lot more as a trade instead of individually.
All right, fair enough. Next book we're going to talk about is Wonder Woman number 11. This issue was written by Greg Rucka. We have Liam Sharp on art and Laura Martin on colors. What are your thoughts on The Lie's conclusion?
Yeah, I thought it was really cool because I can kind of see the connection now between Year One and then also now The Lies, because you start putting one and one together. And to me, throughout this issue, I kind of really forgot about the first issue. Things that happened, just certain details that were off. I didn't even think about those. And it took Steve Trevor to really get my mind going again. So, you know, it's something really weird. Something's off. And then remembering the snake bite and some of the people that Steve had talked to, things like that. I thought it was really, really interesting. And I am very, very curious to see where this goes. Because finally, after so long, I think we're going to start getting a little bit more answers on what exactly are the lies. I really, really want to know what's going on. And who's been manipulating Themyscira, or maybe just Wonder Woman's mind in general. Just so good. Such a really good story. It has me hooked so bad. And of course, what can you really say about Marvel? It's fabulous.
Yeah, what I found most interesting about this issue is, so this is the conclusion. It did not end in the way that I expected to end. There weren't a lot of answers. Like you said, it definitely called back to a lot of the moments from the Year One storyline. So that was cool, like you said, the way that it tied in, and it definitely gave more depth of story and really there's a lot there to explore. Like, okay, so the snake bite, the characters, the way it looks so different, Themyscira looks so different there from now. And then, and plus the whole thing with the robot and Etta Candy. And so in a way, this wrap-up issue almost raised more questions than it provided answers. And so although this is the conclusion of the Lies story arc, it's almost really the beginning, because now we know that absolutely everything that Wonder Woman remembers from the time that she came to Man's World, we'll just put it that way, everything that she's known since that point, anytime she's gone back to the island, that's all been untrue. That's all. Who knows where she was going, who was manipulating. And so Rucka definitely is weaving a long-form story here, and I don't think there are answers that we're going to discover in quick order. It's going to be something that's going to play out over a long period of time. And the way Diana handles it, I think, is going to show us a lot about her character and who she is going forward. I mean, she's been this heroic, self-confident, powerful woman, powerful character up to this point. But now, so much of what she remembers, so much of what she believed to be true, is called into question. So now it's like, is that going to lead to her doubting herself? It's certainly an interesting question to ponder. So, like you said, I don't know what more we can say about the art of Liam Sharp and Lord Martin on colors. Just absolutely breathtaking. He does an incredible job, especially the scene where Wonder Woman's reality kind of shatters and she realizes that everything has been a lie. And then that last page, the panel where she says, "I've never been home," just the anguish on her face. I mean, I don't know a lot of artists who can put that much emotion into a panel, into an illustration. So absolutely incredible, wonderful colors by Laura Martin. I mean, all along, her collaboration with Liam Sharp has really been about mood. Throughout this whole storyline, the whole Wonder Woman the Line storyline, her colors have really set the mood. And it's really been that sense of tone and that sense of mood that has kind of separated the year one storyline from the Lies storyline. It's much more of a cynical view, whereas Romulo Fajardo Jr.'s colors on the year one storyline have been much brighter, much lighter. You really get a sense of hope. And so that's a stark contrast to the two places that Wonder Woman as a character finds herself in these two stories. You know, at the beginning of her heroic career, so to speak, when she's still full of hope and, you know, full of life and ready to get out there and make a difference, versus where she's at now when she's been in the world fighting against evil so long and you can't help but have that affect you and drag you down in a way. And Laura Martin's colors in the Lies story arc have really reflected that. So really a masterful job. I think that it's going to be a really great story to read in the trade. And I can't wait to see what Rucka has planned next, to see what the ramifications are. And now that Wonder Woman has found out that her, in a way, her whole life, her whole history has been a lie, I can't imagine she's going to rest for a second. She's going to be, you know, focusing all her energy on finding out how it happened, who's behind it, and how she can fix it. So, an incredible issue of Wonder Woman, to be sure. What are you going to pick for your book of the week?
My book of the week, by a hair, is Titans.
Yeah, I got to go with Titans. And it's actually not by a hair for me. It's. I mean, there's not a lot of times where you get a book that can so succinctly sum up exactly who a character is, and Titans really did that this week with Wally West, so it wasn't even close for me. So that's going to wrap it up for this episode. Once again, I'd like to thank everyone for joining us. Please visit us at thecomicsourceblog.com for past episodes of the podcast. You can also watch episodes of our YouTube channel there, as well as finding a link to Manny's written blog and my written blog, and of course our sketch gallery. Please follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Also do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to keep up to date on new episodes and convention coverage. And I'd also like to announce, in partnership with LRM, you can go to LRM Online to enjoy our new podcast, Nine Panel Grid. New episodes come out every Wednesday, and we'll cover a variety of topics. If you're a fan of The Comic Source, I think you'll certainly enjoy this new podcast. It's, in a way, it's going to be more of an overview, more of a topical and a surface view of comics. LRM, formerly Latino Review, focuses a lot on the movie side of the comics world and the TV side. And so a lot of their traffic is people that aren't necessarily comic readers. And what we're hoping to do is, by suggesting books that are good entry points for readers and kind of talking about some of the news of the industry, to get people more interested in reading the comics themselves. So again, go to LRM Online to check out the Nine Panel Grid. We appreciate everybody joining us, and we'll talk to you next time.